deseo divino de hacerte mía, mas me destruye la incertidumbre que estoy pasando. Es que la nieve cruel de los años mi cuerpo.
There are some musicians who represent not only the style of music they play, but also the deep culture behind the music, like Bob Marley and reggae, Joao Gilberto and bossa nova. In New York, when you hear salsa, the name is Willie Colon. He was born in the South Bronx and began a dual career as musician and political activist as a teenager in the mid-1960s. He has played on, produced, and arranged over 40 albums and sold 30 million records worldwide and received a Lifetime Achievement Grammy Award from the Latin Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. This coming Saturday, he'll be performing a concert at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts, and I'm very pleased to welcome Willie Colon to our show now. Hello.
Hi. Leonard, I'm really honored to be on your show. This is something really great for me.
Well, I'm honored to have you on the show, Willie.
Thank you.
You're calling your concert this Saturday night at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts De Vuelta al Barrio, or Back to the Neighborhood. How will this show be different from a more typical Willie Colon concert?
Well, you know, I'm going to dig out some of the old stuff. You know, I've been playing around 50 years now, and there's so many... So I've been through so many different kind of incarnations, so many different repertoires. So I'm gonna, you know, reach back and do pull out some of the early stuff, and you know, just kind of revive those things and songs that the people, my fans, haven't heard me play for a long time.
Weren't you a pioneer of trombone in salsa? There was Barry Rogers, Mark Weinstein, and you. But before you, the trombone wasn't part of Latin music.
No, you know, I used to play trumpet, and when I was a little kid, on 139th Street in South Bronx in Mott Haven, my grandmother gave me a trumpet for my 11th birthday, and I just learned how to play it. I was the bugler in the Boy Scouts, so she figured, you know, I figured it out. And I learned how to play a couple of songs, and I started a little group, and we're playing on the sidewalk. And I was happy with my trumpet until this record came on that was called Dolores, the name of the song. And it had this roaring trombone solo on it. And after I heard that, I didn't want to play trumpet anymore.
Well, isn't trombone one of the most... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it was usually kind of a mellow background instrument, but this guy was like screaming really up front, and that was Barry Rogers. You know, he became like my hero. You know, I just wanted to play like him. I used to follow the groups used to play with around, and as I played when I started playing trombone, and see if they would give me a break. Eventually, I was able to play together with him and the Fania All-Stars, which I think was one of the greatest achievements, to be able to play second trombone to Barry.
Isn't trombone one of the most difficult of all the brass instruments to play?
Yeah, it is. You know, you have to really reach out for the notes and, you know where it is on the slide, and I'm not a virtuoso trombonist. I think I'm more of a trombone player than a trombonist. Barry was a guy that the way he introduced the instrument, he created kind of a technique of. He knew the rhythms and how to play against them, and he just knew. It's really ironic that a Jew really created the Latin trombone style. I mean, he's the founder, you know. And I think that if Barry wouldn't have come around, you know, I wouldn't have had a career. I mean, it was just a chance. It's sexy. It can be mellow, it can be loud, and you know, raunchy. It's a very expressive instrument.
Well, you have that wonderful big sound. Take us back to the Colon apartment on East 139th Street in the South Bronx on a summer day in the late 50s or early 60s. What kind of music and sounds would you be hearing from through the window?
Okay. Well, you know, we lived in apartment 21 at 577 East on 39th Street, and it was a kitchen, a living room, and a bedroom, and there were sort of like five of us living there. So I would go to sleep. There'd be crazy parties, and, you know, I'd be through the walls. I could make out the bass lines to all of these songs. So, I learned the music starting from the bass. I would hear, you know, the thumping boom, 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 or whatever, all of the different bass lines. And that was like my first school. When we started getting out on the street and when the weather got better, it was a kind of a really diverse. It wasn't just all Puerto Ricans. It was Cubans and Latinos from all over at that time on 139th Street. And we'd start to have little jam sessions, you know, and we'd have like a Dominican, Fernando would bring his violin, and Mo would play the bottle like a flute, and a couple of guys would play the congas, and a Cuban guy named Papin would bring out his bass. And, you know, I was born in the Bronx, and my parents were born in New York, too. That's all of my Latin, my Spanish, the music, everything I learned right there on 139th Street.
Although you spent summers as a kid in Puerto Rico and some of the other Caribbean islands, how did those experiences influence the melding of the different musical elements in your work?
I just was able, because my grandmother was, how do you say, a campesina, a jibara, country, a peasant. She used to keep sending me back to her sister's farm during the summer so I wouldn't get in trouble. So that made me able to kind of experience all of the really typical folkloric musics of Puerto Rico and be able to, kind of love them and understand them. I was able to internalize them. And it was good, you know, in a couple of instances, because when they kind of forced Hector Lavoe on me, who was just like off the boat from Puerto Rico, I was able to communicate with him, you know, good, because he reminded me of my grandmother. He had no English, and I really understood him. And he was really talented. When I met him and he started singing the songs that I had been playing for a couple of years, he totally changed them, you know, and he just added like another dimension to them. So those stays on the farm were, you know, like money in the bank for me. I was really lucky.
Well, you wound up with some pretty good vocalists over the years, not only Hector Lavoe, but also Celia Cruz and others. That must be a thrill, being behind somebody who is so creative as doing the vocals. And then you've done vocals yourself.
Yes. I started singing, I don't know how many, but 25 years ago. But I was just a horn player, and Hector used to disappear sometimes, and the promoter would say, we're waiting for Hector, He says, either you play now or you get the hell out of here. And so I started singing. And, you know, again, that was a lucky stroke, because later on, after Ruben and I ended our partnership.
That's Ruben Blades or Ruben Blades?
Yeah, yes. Depending, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was able to start singing, and, you know, it clicked.
And then you've done all these other things. Well, you've been a composer, you've been a producer, you've acted, you've directed. Did they just fall into your lap?
Yeah, I am, you know, really famous for not making any plans and just letting things happen, I've just been very lucky. Just been lovely and intuitive. I just never made really long-range plans. I just did whatever came natural.
I'm talking with Willie Colon, who will be performing at the Lehman Center for the Performing Arts in the Bronx this coming Saturday at 8 p.m., a return to the Bronx, or have you ever left the Bronx?
Even when I left, I stayed really close, you know. What just like Robin Williams' death just recently, you know, I can understand, and sometimes I'm glad I'm not as famous as he was, because a lot of times the fame and success is like a prison. You know, when I work in Latin America, I can't leave the room. So I can't imagine what it is not to be able to just kind of disappear. Thankfully, you know, New York people are pretty jaded, and that's why I don't leave New York City or the Bronx. But I think that being able to come up and be in places and just be like a normal person and try to live, not attract a lot of attention and stuff is like really something that people that are like super famous, like Robin Williams and, you know, all these other stars, they really sweat that, you know, from normal people's lives.
But he also was obviously depressed. Yeah. You've been politically active since the mid-1960s, organizing, marching, and working within the system to create change at all levels, local, regional, national, international. How did that come about? Was this something that you got from your parents and your grandparents?
No, actually, my grandmother used to tell me, stop trying to be the Redeemer because they're going to crucify you. She didn't believe in making waves, but I got kind of thrown in that. I grew up, and the music I was making was during all the civil rights period and stuff like that. And when the police would come and, scatter us because we're having a jam session. We were watching on black and white TV, Martin Luther King marching on Selma, and although the music we were playing back then wasn't political per se, playing it was kind of like a civil disobedience or whatever, because people used to complain about the jam sessions. And also the dances and stuff like that had like a double meaning to us. It was entertainment, but the social aspect of the magnet of drawing us together and be able to see our community together, it was like a unifying thing. So the stories we started telling, they have a little bit of socio-political lyrics people started asking me to come and speak at the schools or come to the city council and read something to the city council for them. And I kind of got pulled in that way. When I started working with Ruben Blades, our lyrics started becoming very explicitly political, socio-political. And, I think that era with me and Ruben was... the music became almost like a movement, and not only, a fad, but it was like a movement, a unifying movement throughout Latin America.
You've run for office a couple of times. What happened?
I have an unbroken record of losing elections.
Do you think it's because voters didn't take you seriously as a politician? They thought of you, although the races were kind of close. But they, do you think it's a matter of them seeing you as a musician first?
Some of that, but I think my biggest problem as a politician is that I find it very difficult to get on the phone and beg people for money. And you got to be able to do that, without breaking a sweat. You got to be able to do it with a straight face, and it's difficult for me. I don't know why. So that's gonna it's gonna limit my success. It's about money. You really have to have enough money to wage campaign. I think that my run for public advocate, was amazing. People were running with millions, and I think if I broke $100,000 in my campaign chest, that's a lot.
Well, you've worked with both parties. You worked with Mayor Bloomberg as part of the country's first Latin commission to bring more Latino tourism to the city and to support Latino culture. And is that continuing under Mayor de Blasio?
Mayor de Blasio reappointed me as an advisor to the LEMIC Commission, the Latin Entertainment Music Commission.
You supported Bill Thompson's run for mayor in the primaries, but then you wrote a song for the de Blasio campaign that was aired before the general election.
Yes, I did.
And it was what kind of song was that?
About it. It's just this, a melody with this name in it, and images. It was kind of a video thing. Images of him, you know, in the community.
Go ahead.
No, I think it was at that point. I wanted to join, but it was really late in the campaign. Everybody decided to get behind de Blasio because he was the candidate, and there wasn't a lot of time to really do a lot of. It was at the end of the campaign.
Do you see?
I had spoken with Billy Thompson, you know, back when before Bloomberg did his third term, and you know, I had kind of committed that I was going to be with him, and then Bloomberg decided to run again, and I kind of had to just stay with Bloomberg, so that way the next time it came, you know, I was committed to Billy, and I guess the best man won. I guess that's the way it goes.
Well, how do you see your future? Will you ever run for office again, or is it pretty much music and dabbling in politics, supporting politicians, inserting yourself into Venezuelan politics, or whatever else just appeals to you?
I really don't know. I'm like 64 now, and you know, I'm kind of looking to slow down and you know maybe smell the flowers a little bit. I don't know. I just have to give you a political answer about that. I'll keep my options open, but I'm not really looking to run for anything again.
Meanwhile, there is this concert at 8 p.m. on Saturday night at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts called De Vuelta al Barrio, or Back to the Neighborhood. And Willie Colon, thank you so much for being on our show to talk about it.
Thank you. Thank you, Lyndon. Thank you for having me.
By the way, for ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org.
Sepas lo mucho que te quiero, aunque no te vuelva.